lower their cost of operation in order to keep the cost of the product that they provide affordable for us. But by keeping fossil fuels affordable, we are simply prolonging the danger that burning them creates. And these market distortions do not take into account the extreme weather damage that global warming is producing. Last year, in 2023, the United States experienced a record number of billion-dollar extreme weather disasters, and we see record-setting heat waves, forest fires, and intense rain bombs occurring around the world. A proper accounting of the cost of fossil fuels would take into account the cost of these extreme weather events. It would also take into account the cost of the human health impacts that unclean air produced by burning fossil fuels, and also human health issues related to heat waves and extreme weather events, are drawing on global economies. The cost of fossil fuels doesn't accurately reflect the cost that they have on human society. And so we need to properly price these fossil fuels, and by doing so, we will make them increasingly expensive. We can do this in a way that is not a shock to the economy and further drive our shift towards clean energy in the form of hydro, solar, wind, and other types of clean energy, geothermal, for instance.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Dr. Charles Fletcher from the University of Hawaii. We're talking about a clear-headed paper titled Earth at Risk, An Urgent Call to the End of the Age of Destruction and Forge a Just and Sustainable Future.
We need to get a better handle on these economic tools, and we need to move away from this concept of net zero as an excuse to continue greenhouse gas emissions. Many companies are purchasing into the carbon offset market as an opportunity to continue burning fossil fuels as part of their operations. But when you examine the carbon offset market, we find that many of these carbon offsets really lack substance. They are not robust, and we have very little verification, reporting, and monitoring going on with these carbon offset contracts. They are really, in most cases, operating simply as excuses for companies to continue relying on fossil fuels. We know what the tools are that we need to apply here. The critical thing is convincing governments to take these steps.
Well, I agree, but I'd like to add another dimension to all this that you do cover in the new paper, and that's population. While humans continue to add more billions to our numbers, people like Elon Musk and many news pieces worry we won't have enough people. We're headed for population crash. Where did your group come out on population and the climate emergency?
Population is one of the key features that is driving Earth at risk. We spend a bit of time talking about the population issue. Several studies point to the holding capacity or the bearing capacity of planet Earth with regard to human population. And we make the point that our population has exceeded the capacity of Earth's natural resources to continue to sustainably provide us with what we need for life. The solution to overpopulation is female empowerment and education. And study after study shows that promoting gender justice by supporting women's and girls' education and rights reduces fertility rates and raises the community standard of living where these justice steps are taken. We still have a number of patriarchal societies around the world. The majority of societies, in fact, are this way, but the solution to population explosion is to give women autonomy over their own fertility choices, and we promote that quite strongly in this paper. You know, the five emergencies have their roots in three fundamental issues. One is overpopulation. The second is that we have developed an extractive relationship with nature. And this global economic model based on profits accumulation is founded on this extractive relationship with nature rather than a truly sustainable relationship with nature. And the third issue is a long history of colonialism and imperialism fundamentally. Now, imperialism is when one community exerts its will on another community, and had 4 or 5 centuries of colonialism, slavery, indigenous erasure in many, many nations as the post-colonial era took place following, well, largely in the 20th century, and colonies from European conquerors were returned back to local governments. The indigenous lands were never returned to indigenous communities, but instead new governments that were stood up took control of these lands, and they are selling the lumber, mineral, soil, agriculture, and water rights out from underneath the very people who know how to sustainably manage these lands, local indigenous communities or local communities writ large. So population growth, imperialism, and an extractive relationship with nature based on an economic model of profit and wealth accumulation are the core issues that need to change. And we promote a cultural shift, and we list several steps that need to be taken globally in order to move away from the underpinning of the 5 global emergencies.
Chip, you've researched and published papers on the intersection of rising seas and coastlines. What is the situation in your Hawaii?
Well, our research on sea level rise has revealed a number of interesting phenomena. Many people think that sea level rise is simply the ocean coming up over the shoreline, and indeed that is true. But it also turns out that the water table under our coastal communities is rising with the rising ocean. Here in Hawaii, and from our research, we have learned that many other coastal communities around the world, the water table sits around the high tide level as an elevation, approximately the high tide level in the ocean. Now, many coastal communities are only a few feet in elevation above high tide, and a few feet of sea level rise is very likely to occur this century, bringing the water table up to the land surface in these communities. Now, when the water table breaks through the land surface, it's called a wetland, and wetlands and urbanization do not get along very well with each other. As the water table rises, we find roads beginning to experience decay and cracking and breakage. Pipes and other types of infrastructure that carry fresh water and sewage and electrical and communication networks that are buried experience changes in their environment as the water table rises. We also find that storm drains that are designed to carry runoff when it rains out into the ocean instead carry salt water up onto the roadways in a phenomenon known as storm drain discharge. And then when it rains, we have what's known as compound flooding. And if it rains at high tide, we already see that the water table is high, so there's very little dry soil to soak up the rain. The storm drain systems, the drainage systems, are backed up with salt water. And so we get flash flooding that takes place in our urbanized communities with pools of water forming on the roadways, preventing traffic from passing. And when this happens during rush hour, it breaks up families. Very often, members of a family trying to get back home after their jobs have ended at the end of the day are stranded due to this urbanized flash flooding. And you have people at home, perhaps you have children, perhaps you have the elderly, you have folks that need medical attention that are recuperating at home. They are left abandoned. The whole thing radiates through our community with severe consequences. This is only going to get worse. We see this situation already taking place today. We are modeling these impacts We are producing online maps for government agencies and engineers to see where the flooding is going to be worse. And we're working with government agencies on developing new policies and procedures so that as sea level rise continues and grows worse, we don't continue to experience the worst versions of the flooding.
You know, I have to tell you, I've interviewed several scientists and authors about sea level rise, and you've just given me some perspectives that I had not heard before, so I really appreciate that. On another topic of food, guests on our program predict it is only a matter of time until two or more breadbasket regions lose their crops to heat or drought or floods or new diseases as the climate shifts. And this is a huge subject, but how would you summarize the coming food emergencies?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. That is a huge problem. I believe that unless we get a stronger momentum globally on cutting our fossil fuel emissions, we are going to see communities that grow the food starting to hang on to the food locally, less likely to ship it. And if they do, it's going to become much more expensive, and they'll be shipping the worst versions of their food. The breadbasket failure issue is not just about wildfire or heat waves or severe flooding. It's also about the loss of micronutrients that occurs as the level of CO2 in the air increases. We see that the four cereals, wheat, rice, soy, and maize, lose micronutrients, zinc, iron, vitamin B complex, and their proteins get replaced by carbohydrates, so they grow more sugary. This impact leads to micronutrient malnutrition around the world. So the coming food crisis is very severe, and we are very concerned, especially in Hawaii, where we only have a standing stock of food that would last us less than 2 weeks, because we're very dependent on ships and airplanes that bring us our food every single day. And there are many communities like us around the world that depend on other people to grow food for them. So this is, you know, one of the several things that will lead to community displacement and the growing tide of climate migrants that is already well underway on the planet.
And your team writes, quote, "The authors of this review believe that humanity stands at an inflection point in human history that will determine many characteristics of future life on Earth," end quote. Are you suggesting we need a change in human nature? How deep does this change have to go to succeed?
I think human nature is already prepared to tackle this problem. What we need is to shift our cultural values. We need education and sustainability and equity concepts beginning with the very earliest grades in all schools on the planet. We need policy and legal frameworks and legislation that mandate sustainable practices and ensure social equity. We need economic incentives to shift the economic focus from growth at any cost to a model that values environmental and social well-being. We need cross-sector partnerships where the public, private, civil society, and academia develop integrated and comprehensive approaches to sustainability and equity, community empowerment and inclusion, corporate responsibility and accountability, financial incentives for sustainable and equitable behavior, innovation in technology, leadership, cultural narratives, global engagement on this issue. We list all of these in our paper. And fundamentally, they add up to a cultural shift in values away from a growth, profit, wealth-oriented economic global model to one that recognizes Earth is our lifeboat in the cosmic sea of space. We are consuming and polluting the biophysical basis of our own existence. No one's coming to rescue us, and we're on the edge of a cliff that we need to back away from immediately if we're going to maintain a world where future generations can thrive and prosper in the way that we have.
You know, it's interesting. Rob Hopkins, the founder of the Transition Town movement, or a founder of it, has gone on to teach the key role of imagination, and that's what he writes about. And I wonder, hearing the things that you just proposed, which we all in our good selves would love to see happen, if some people are tuning out and going, well, it's just so bad now, it could never happen. Is the human situation so hopeless, even good people shut out hope?
It is true that there is a growing movement of doomists. I'm well aware of them. However, I don't believe that we are past hope. I think that the feeling that, the doom and gloom community has is actually grief. They need to continue to engage. The solution to grief is action, which brings optimism, and time. You must let time pass and not give up. It's not really about hope, which sort of puts the emphasis on someone else solving the problem. It's about optimism, taking action, communicating what we know, not giving up. We cannot give up. There are children at risk here, and we must continue to change the cultural narrative of humans' relationship with planet Earth for the children. I'm aware of the problem that you're describing, but I don't think that that's the solution.
In one part of the paper, you say we're in a state of climate. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, climate purgatory means that nearly every nation has pledged net zero emissions. They promised to cut their greenhouse gas emissions sufficient to stop global warming at 1.5 degrees, keeping with the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. But at the same time, when you examine the nations of the world, actual investments in energy infrastructure and policies, you find that they are investing in fossil fuel infrastructure at a rate which completely violates their pledges for net zero by mid-century. And several studies have quantified the actual policies and investments around the world by governments and shown that it puts us on a pathway of nearly 3 degrees Celsius before the end of the century. And at 3 degrees Celsius net warming, models tell us that about one-third of humanity will be displaced by extreme weather, expanding desertification, reductions in food and water security. Communities on the march lead to global security problems because they come up against political boundaries. So that's what climate purgatory is. We've made promises, but we are not investing in the promises. We are instead investing in fossil fuel, the growth of fossil fuels.
And we seem to be at a kind of focal point of change where scientists are talking more about abrupt climate change than they used to. It used to be science was very, you know, incremental and slow, almost glacial, but now there could be abrupt climate change. And at the same time, people like Dr. Tim Lenton from Exeter talk about human tipping points, that we could have social tipping points where we get things changed socially much faster than we thought possible. Do you expect both, and can we cope with both?
Yeah, the tipping point concept tends to grab everybody's attention. So it's alarmist in nature, and I don't mean that in a negative way. We are conjecturing through the use of physics-based models about tipping points with ocean circulation. We conjecture about tipping points with tropical rainforest, especially the Amazon, which has now been damaged to the about 18% of the Amazon has been damaged. And some of the biophysical models suggest that by 20% damage, it will cross the tipping point and move into savannahization simply because the Amazon runs its own hydrologic cycle. It makes its own rainfall. And by removing one-fifth of the trees, you sufficiently damage the water cycle that it's unable to support the rest of the forest. It'll be interesting to see if these physical or biophysical tipping points take place. With regard to cultural tipping points, I think that these are true. I look at it as a positive thing. I think there have been such amazing advancements that have taken place in the last decade or two, and we've seen amazing shifts in cultural viewpoints. Hopefully we can see a sustainable future and that fossil fuel uses are immoral. Hopefully that cultural tipping point will take place as well.
Well, we're wrapping up. What happens to Earth at risk now? Who can use it, and do you see it as a continuing assessment in coming years, possibly?
Yes. a number of our authors are using the paper to develop curricula. Krista Heiser, who is a professor of English language here at the University of Hawaii. Phoebe Barnard, who is with University of Washington and University of Cape Town, South Africa, has been working on talking points and curricula. We'd like to see more of our authors and, in fact, more of the public use this paper to underpin teaching and education around the world. Education, of course, takes many forms. One example is what we're doing this morning. And I hope that people who are concerned and read the paper will use the paper to write their own op-eds. We need the word to get out and to expand. I think that by reading the paper, folks will become more educated on these issues, and then they need to talk about what they know and what they have learned. The paper is setting some records for public digestion. It's in the top 5% of all research outputs scored by a standard metric called Altmetric, which looks at all online uses and references to the paper. It has been viewed about 19,000 times, and we have almost 2,000 downloads, 2,000 downloads of the PDF of the paper. So many people are engaging with the paper, and we need them now to speak up about it and spread the word.
And we'll do just that. From the School of Ocean and Earth Science and Technology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa, we've been speaking with scientist and interim dean Charles Fletcher. He is co-author of the April 2024 PNAS paper, Earth at Risk, An Urgent Call to End the Age of Destruction and Forge a Just and Sustainable Future. It is open access. It's free for anybody to read. You can find a link to it and to follow up more in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. Chip Fletcher, thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you, Alex, for all that you do. I really appreciate spending time with you. Stay safe out there.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
This is a climate emergency. Find out more on the blog, ecoshock.org. Free for all, ecoshock.org.
Well, we'll start back with a little ocean news. It's not breaking news, just the same old disaster. World oceans continue to smash temperature records and scientific expectations. The graph comparing ocean heat in 2023 is unreal, with a big jump for the first few months of 2024, even higher. This jaw-dropping stuff is hard for land-living humans to understand. Yeah, world coral is bleaching a fourth time, and we may lose it. But deep under the sea, another big story is coming out. Ocean currents that determine climate across the world are slowing down. Yes, ocean surface temperatures are record hot, especially in the North Atlantic. These hot surface waters are curling under glaciers and melting megatons of ice. The Earth has become less reflective as ice shrank back in the Arctic and Antarctic due to warmer waters. Sea level will certainly rise. But there is a deeper issue, and I do mean deeper. Here on Radio EcoShock, we began this story with master scientist Kevin Trenberth on ocean heat. Then Australian scientist Matthew England explained the bottom water circulation around Antarctica has already tipped into a new, slower state. That massive overturning current, which powers the global ocean pump, could eventually stop, as it has before in long ages past. All that Antarctic deep water is connected to the North Atlantic current, which is called the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, or AMOC. We have run numerous interviews about AMOC weakening and what that means for weather in New England and all of Northern Europe. Watch out, the UK and Ireland. I will put those links in my show blog, of course, at ecoshock.org. But absolutely new science shows deep currents in the Atlantic have slowed significantly by about 12%. If that doesn't sound like much, we just can't imagine the incredible amount of water involved, ocean water that is now not moving, not arriving, not transferring anything else, like nutrients. The article, Weakening of the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, Abysmal Limb, and that means the deep part, in the North Atlantic, was published in Nature Geoscience on April 19th. Disappearing deep water currents is one more link in the chain of things we can't see, that we don't know, and should never be messing with. We have to kick the habit, you and I. These fossil power drugs are prone to overdose, for all humans self-activate. Climate activists wanted. Everywhere. All the time. Next week, Big Oil wants you to love the Canadian tar sands. You are going to eat your dose of oil and love it, as all the advertising and fossil-friendly bots train your brain. Experts in public relations will tell you how they do it. On a side note, as I said, the power in our little village went out while I had interviews scheduled. I coped as I could. A transformer blew up and caught fire, and the local volunteer fire department quickly had it all under control. It happens. But then the internet blew up. From thousands of miles away, a Facebook poster explained the government did it, no doubt using HAARP, to frighten all us rural people into 15-minute cities where we can be controlled. And then Facebook's Meta AI chimed in to that lore with a completely out-of-context comment. Maybe 40 people, or well, could be 100, use that local forum, and the AI cannot be blocked. You can't stop this thing. That's how fast everything is moving. AI penetrates right to the fringes, and it can't be turned off. As our power came back 18 hours later, I realized again how much I don't want the whole system to crash, even though it should. Good thing none of this happened in Phoenix in summer. A May 2023 study figures about 12,000 people would die there if electricity went out in a heat wave. Almost 800,000 people of Phoenix area would need care in the emergency department due to the heat, but of course, that's crazy impossible, not going to happen. In February 2024, I interviewed the lead author, Brian Stone, director of the Urban Climate Georgia Tech. Nobody is ready to live through the heat when the breaking point comes. So in my view, grid blackouts during extreme heat will not only happen, they will become more common. Electric grids in most developed countries were not designed to withstand long periods of high heat. Power lines sag and may contact trees or buildings previously a safe distance below in the heat. This may be why some California electric companies shut off power during extreme heat waves after their equipment sparked massive wildfires. Other equipment, including transformers, can overheat and catch fire. The system is not built for what is coming. We know what to do. We are not lost. We are just going in the wrong direction. I guess we will just have to wait until our artificial savior comes. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Radio EcoShock and caring about our world.
Burning questions in advance. In a world of chaos we cannot see, we turn to machines begging on our knees. Artificial savior, when will you save us? Oh, Deus Ex Machina. Fear and hunger in our eyes. The world's a battleground. No compromise. But how bad does it have to be for machines to save humanity? Algorithms, minds so advanced, can they rescue us from this fossil trance? Burning questions in advance. Artificial savior.